Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. I'm John Montgomery, joined as always by Mike. How's it going, my friend?
Very well, thank you, sir. How are you?
Good, and apologies, everyone, for the two-week hiatus in this podcast. Normally, we don't do a podcast on break week, but last week, week number six, I actually took a week off and headed out to Colorado to spend some time with the family and biking in the mountains and hiking and so forth. So that's why we didn't do a podcast last week, but we're back in full mode this week. Very busy and even getting ready for the new term at this point.
I am in awe of your fitness regime. I am humbled in the presence of your athleticism. I could not ride bikes up mountains. Let's just be really clear about that, right? No go uphill in mountain.
With respect, however, my friend, you have done an amazing job in the last several years at your fitness regimen as well as diet regimen as well. So while it may not include
riding bikes
and that. Yeah, but it's quite a bit of work to sail the yacht. It's a fairly strenuous activity. Oh. I mean, come on, you know.
I bow before you
from that standpoint as well. So yeah, okay, anyway, yeah. I did have a good time, and frankly, it's also healthy, I think, to have that do that kind of exercise. It's not just good from a health standpoint, but also a mental health standpoint. I'm a big believer in that, as you know.
Oh yeah, it's a huge thing in our industry to get out and get some fresh air and get some exercise. I mean, we used to call it post bod, right? Someone would come in post and they'd look pretty good, and then in like one or two things that happened, you'd see friends say either they got married, in which case they no longer need to stay fit and healthy and they've let themselves go,
secondly,
they're being successful in post-production and they've started to have those because, you know, it's like meals are available. You never have to
non-stop snacking. You have people bringing you food, beer, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, not beer. Right? So that was just me. But anyway, so yes, it's the reason for a bit of a break. But yeah, I really did enjoy myself. And it was a fun race with about 3,000 other people, 10,000 feet up at 10,000 feet in the mountains. Though they did cancel one of the parts of it due to snow. So we didn't get to quite do the full ride, but I much prefer that because as long as it's area with no guardrails and 1,000-foot drops. So had we done that, we might not be doing the podcast this week. you might not have had someone to do the podcast this week with. But anyway, good times over at FX PhD. I just want to, right from the start, I just want to mention to everyone, just similar to what we do at the end of the term with our end-of-term surveys. More recently, we've been doing midterm surveys, and it's not too late to provide feedback as part of the new courses at FX PhD. We send out emails to everyone who's part of the term, targeted to everyone who is in each individual course. But we'd really love to get more responses, so we actually added on the downloads page. If you go to your downloads page for courses that are new, there's a little link right below the name of the course, allowing you to actually access a link to take part in the midterm survey for your course. And again, the profs really do take this feedback to heart. They do listen to it. Mike and I both really appreciate you guys taking the time to answer these surveys. And I mean, I think these surveys, especially the midterm ones, are especially short. It's basically four questions, I think. Short and sweet. Get your feedback. Help us make things better. And do any tweaks or improvements that we can at this point in the term. And even though it's week seven, there's still, you know, four or three classes left, and we just want to make them as best we possibly can with your feedback. So thanks for taking the time to do those.
Yeah, no, we really do appreciate it. The surveys, I mean, sometimes you see a survey and you think, is anyone really paying attention to this? It's kind of like it's on autopilot. It's not the case. We really do pay a lot of attention to what's going on. And look, it's just one of many, but it's a key part of us getting feedback from you guys and feeding into our thinking for the next term, which is why we're incredibly keen to get it now.
Yeah, very much so. So again, if you haven't already, take the time to do that. And thanks to those of you who have done that already. Now, I know another thing that we actually added for people who aren't a member of FXPHD this term and may have been past members, we actually have Gareth Edwards' killer Gorilla Guide to After Effects available as part of our Fast Forward program, which basically means you click the store button and you can go there and download it for immediate download. And really gotten a nice response to that, Mike, since we launched that last week.
Yeah, and hasn't Godzilla gone well? His next film is going to be a Star Wars spinoff. Two Godzilla films after that, Godzilla 2 and 3. He's done all right there, my son.
Yes, he has done a nice job, and just couldn't have happened, as I say, to a nicer guy. Really, really happy for him.
Oh, that is so true.
You know, and really have always appreciated his kindness and openness. You know, email him quite a bit. It's always good to hear from him, friendly, and always curious about what's happening at FXPHD and FX Guide. So, but anyway, if you haven't checked out that Filmmaker's Guide to After Effects, really do. And I would say even Mike, I mean, okay, you know, I guess I'm trying to sell something here. But in all seriousness, it's really an eye-opening course just from the standpoint of what you need, what you can do to get the job done in an effective way. Even if you're not using After Effects, just kind of a mental approach on how you tackle shots, especially if you have to do a large volume of shots like Gareth had to do. Really an interesting course from that standpoint.
Well, if you don't want to listen to John, if I can quote from Stu, who admittedly is a friend of ours, who said that he thought it was brilliant, the course. And he said, I get nothing promoting this offer that I'm reading off his blog. This is me speaking to you from the heart. This is the best $100 a filmmaker could ever spend. And I didn't even know he was going to post that. So yeah, it's definitely a really, really good piece to absorb. I mean, you know, of course, we were, you know, this is before Godzilla. This is a repeat. This is stuff that he did a little while ago. So, you know, disclaimer on that, it's obviously not the latest version of After Effects. But yeah, it's a phenomenally helpful course. And we've had great feedback on it, as you say, John.
Yeah, it's really been, I think, one of, close to, if not one of our most popular courses of all time at FXPHD. And maybe that's true because it was back in, what, 2009 when we actually originally did the course. But just the kind of, speaking to the kind of response that members have had to it as well, not just the sheer volume of people taking the course, but the actual response. And I always get that, bring Gareth back to teach another course. And you know what? We'd love to. But
he's just got a couple of films he's working on.
Yeah. But yeah. So anyway, that's one of the reasons why we haven't been able to have him back. But in all seriousness, it's not because he wouldn't want to do it, because he really did enjoy the experience at FXPHD, and even attended several of our meetups in London as well when he went over there and did that as well. So anyway, check that out. I know many of you have that opportunity. If you're a member of the current term of FXPHD and you're looking for that last class to tick as part of your, you know, two or three or four courses that you got this term, that's also available for members inside the vault on, you know, that's on the right-hand side when you're choosing things as well. So if you're not a member of FXPHD this term, you can get it for $99. If you are a member, it's available for you in the vault.
Yes, yes. And I'm sorry, I was just, I don't know why it just popped into my head.
Daydreaming.
I wanted to, sorry?
Were you daydreaming?
No, well, it's just not that. It's just that I haven't spoken to you because you've been bike riding up mountains, as I said. And I just, you know, we like discussing industry stuff on the podcast as well as what's happening inside PhD. And I just was desperate to get your opinion on Apple spending $3.25 billion Australian dollars for Beats.
That is so rat hole-ish, Mike.
I know it's a rat hole.
You know what? It's a couple things, and I was following.
I'll segue back in a
today.
Second.
Yeah, no, it's okay. There is a tie-in. There is a tie.
Yeah.
No, but, well, you know, they've got over $1 billion a year in revenue. I've read some reports that the headphones cost only $14 to make. There's quite a bit of markup on those. It is a large amount of money, but adding $1.1 billion to your revenue and maybe something's growing. And obviously, it's a private company, so Apple is probably is privy to more information than what we do as far as that. So I think that's, you know, it's an interesting one, but I've spent 1.5% or 2% of my cash on hand on a lot worse things than Apple spending on Beats, I guess.
So do you think that spending $3 billion on some headphones is better or worse than spending billions on Oculus from Facebook? See, now that's a good question.
Well, it is a good question because it's a, you know, one, you're buying, frankly, a known quantity because you have a revenue stream. They know the books. They know what they're making. They know the business. It's an established business, Beats, whereas Oculus, not really at this point, has future potential for certain, but that's yet to be proven.
You'd have to say the headphones are closer to Apple than goggles are Facebook, wouldn't you?
Really? Yeah. Except I love some of the memes of people watching Facebook by themselves in their Oculus Rift device. You know, I loved some of those photos of the future of Facebook. But yes, you're absolutely correct. There's certainly a closer tie and certainly a partnership. And I've also read some stuff about Apple reaching a different target of customers as well with the Beats customers, kind of reaching outside their normal customer group to expand their audience as well. So I don't know. Interesting to see. I think that I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that they know more about what they're doing than we do at this point. But it certainly is something that caused me pause when that was first rumored several weeks ago.
The thing for me is Beats, as to quote somebody I read online, so this is not original, you know, have done a hell of a job in branding.
Yeah.
Now, let's not, I don't know if that $14 thing is right, but like they have made a brand from a category that's been around for ages. I mean, you know, if you were saying, I'm going to come up with new headphones, well, there are lots of headphones. Yeah, but mine are going to be white. Okay. Whatever.
Yeah.
You know. But the only other company that has such amazingly powerful branding stuff around electronics is Apple. I mean, Apple does a really good job. Well, maybe not the only one, but, you know, certainly another. Apple is very good at branding.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, you know, we just all think of it in terms of headphones, but there's probably some other stuff going on there that's not just the headphones.
Yeah.
You're getting a really, you know, good marketing group that's very focused on a particular demographic, and that isn't, you know, 50-year-old plus guys. So
I think actually it's interesting you mentioned Facebook. I also think Google and their $3.2 billion purchase of Nest was another interesting, somewhat parallel to that, right?
Well, that one, that one is even further out there for me. Like I can really get a lot closer to Facebook's acquisition than I can to the thermometer. I mean, the thermostat. I mean, that's just what? I had to read that several times before I could even like get my head around what on earth was going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. That one was just like, we got some money to spend. I like Nest, and I do love Nest. I have four of them in our house.
But for Google?
For Google, right.
For that kind of money?
They want to throw ads up on it. I don't, you know, they want to track and know what we're doing at home with a camera that's built inside each and every Nest. I don't know. Is that part of it? I have no idea.
I mean, Google does weird acquisitions. The fact that, you know, the motion control rig for the camera from Gravity, that whole company.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right.
Is now part of Google. Because obviously when you think of Google, you think they need lots of robotics. It's just, but like even the robotics, I'm like, okay, well, they're doing the driverless car thing, so maybe I can get there. Nest, I can't get there at all. I'm sorry. And Facebook is, yeah, that's also a bit out there for me. But anyway.
Yes. Well, hey.
It's a new world.
New world.
So we are not selling FXPHD for $2 billion. I'm sorry to start that rumor. We are not going to sell out for that kind of money. I'm sorry. No. I say no.
No.
Spend a lot more money to buy a PhD than that. Yeah. What do you think we are? Instagram?
Could yes, be. Exactly. Exactly. Another thing, another bit of sad news actually this week that from a graphics design standpoint, and someone that I followed over the years, Massimo Vignelli, passed away this week. Passed away on Tuesday at the age of 83. And his designs and from furniture and objects to graphic design and typography for things like the New York City, the classic, New York City subway map from the 70s has truly been an inspiration for me in his work over the years. And really sad news. I actually caught wind of that about a week ago, one of his business partners or friends actually asked people to send and write a letter or send something in because he would love and appreciate that. So I took a picture of a selfie of me in front of my signed New York City subway diagram print from him and sent it off to him last week. But really extraordinary talent, miss him from a graphics design standpoint.
Yes. Very, very clear work. That's probably the way I describe it.
Yeah, very much so. And he's done things like some very cool chairs for Knoll. They're those kind of one-piece curved chairs with the metal. I forget what they're called. I want to say towel.
Okay.
Handkerchief chairs, is that what it is? I know they're designed for Knoll because I actually did some videos for him when I was in, or not for him, but for Knoll, the furniture company, when I was in Grand Rapids, working in Grand Rapids. That's how I actually came into contact with them. But those are very cool. They have IKEA knockoffs for $24, the Pooplies, I think they're called at IKEA. He did that Bloomingdale's bag, paper bag. What's it say? Brown paper bag, I think it says on them, but really some classic and iconic designs. And if you want to get a taste for it, do a search online for his some of the style guides related to the New York City subway map. Really some cool things about how to lay stuff out and kern and things like that, dealing with typography and standards for the subway map. Interesting stuff. So anyway.
So you Californians just weighed in pretty heavily on the old tax subsidy thing there, didn't you? $100 million dropped today by the California
Assembly. I did not know that.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, so I'll keep paying my taxes back in Illinois.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any halt to the run of... tax credits and schemes to get people to move around the world. And, L.A. is now heavily, well, I guess California, is heavily weighing in $100 million. It's not nothing. It's probably, I don't even know how many productions that would actually extend out to. I think it was pretty much universally passed as well. It was like there was no, and of course, if that was the end of it, but of course somebody else is just going to come and compete again on top. It's an interesting use of tax dollars around the world, an interesting problem that our friend Jeff Huser is particularly annoyed about.
Yeah, and it's chasing it from, the productions end up chasing it from one state to another. Popular examples of that include House of Cards, for instance, threatening to move out of the Virginia, Washington, D.C. area for their filming and things like that. So what happened today? Because it was $100 million before.
Was it?
Yeah. So it was $100 million. I thought prior. That's kind of their standard that they've been at for the last several years, or not?
Expand the $100 million. Yeah, they're expanding that. I don't just happened today. I just heard about it. Let me just look it up.
Sorry, I only live here. I find it.
That's right. I can tell you all about it. They're expanding the $100 million program with another $100 million. Yeah, so it's going between $300 and $400 million, I think.
Wow. Okay, so three or four times.
No, it's going from...
$100 million.
Okay, so here we go. Okay, now I'm reading. Okay, God, I hate people when they do this on podcasts. the figure is going to be added to the... I thought it was adding another $100 million to the $100 million program, right?
Okay.
But the state budget, the industry folks saying that months... This hope to see the program increase to between 300 and 400 million, which could put California close to New York's $420 million incentives, the highest in the nation.
Okay. So still a bit up in the air then?
It's only because they don't put the number in the expansion of the tax. When they're actually passing the law, they don't put a cap on it or some kind of physical number in there. So they pass amendments to what I guess is entitled to be claimed. And then there are estimates of how much that will then translate to in terms of funding.
Okay.
But I'm quoting from Dateline. So I don't know how, you know,
right.
Valid that is, but right. It's certainly not a rumor. It's a...
Yeah.
You know. But yes, if maybe I should not have dropped that on you. I just thought that you would know all about it. I assumed it would be kind of big news in California. Because when I've lived in LA and when I visited in LA, this is the kind of stuff that gets a lot of attention.
It really
in
does.
The local press.
It really does. But in my thing is, I think it's one of those, as you know, the coming back from being on holiday focused. That I haven't been doing a whole lot of focusing on other things, which I normally would do and be aware of, like listening to the radio, listening to hearing the news, hear about that. So, yes, you're certainly correct that normally I would hear that. And it is one of the amazing things out here in Los Angeles, having moved from Chicago, just how important everything related to the entertainment industry is here in LA. I know that sounds obvious to everybody, and I'd heard that, but to actually experience it, it's pretty mind-blowing.
If you're in Santa Monica or Santa Barbara or that kind of the West Coasty area, I mean, it feels like that's the town's industry. If you were in Detroit, yeah. Like cars were right. You know, the town's industry.
Yeah, it truly is. So it is incredibly different from Chicago. You hear these issues and they're kind of ancillary to kind of what we're doing in Chicago, even though we're in the production committee. But here, you know, you feel it's such a focus from sensible things like worrying about business and, you know, the tax incentives to simply some of the star worshiping, I guess, that occurs on TV and the entertainment news of what's happening to the stars and that superfluous coverage, I think, about what's happening in their lives that is a little less, way less important, I think, than, you know, the serious business issues that we're talking about. But very much, like you say, that's a good analogy between the car industry and Detroit, or at least Detroit 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are cities that, I mean, I've heard the same thing said about Dallas and the oil industry, that, you know, it's just the town's thing, and that obviously it isn't. I mean, obviously a lot of other things are done in California and in Los Angeles, for that matter. But, yeah, it certainly feels that way. Anyway, we're going to do some more business stuff coming up on Background, which was a long way around to that. We've got some other interesting stuff happening before then on rendering in Background. We've been... researching some stuff which we couldn't really talk about until a couple of films that we've got amazing footage from are actually released. And then once they drop, we can show a bunch of stuff. So I've been holding some stuff back, but I think you guys are going to really like it. And as I say, the other thing is we're going to be balancing it out with some business stuff and discussing some of the implications. I got to do a little bit of that earlier in the term. I'm going to do a bit more of it before term is out. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to Background. I really enjoy being able to research Background fundamentals and provide it to you. And I think it is a good aspect of PhD that we try and just, you know, round out from this is how you press this button to actually equipping you with the tools that you need to do stuff in the industry. And we hope to pick that up even more next term, because next term is obviously the July term, which encompasses SIDGRAPH, which has a big component to do with the job fair and a lot of people going to see companies about jobs. And that's always the term at PhD where we try and do stuff over your resumes and pitching for work and getting stuff in. But one of the things that... that, as I say, I'm going to touch on this term, is just that whole idea of it being a much more wider range of things that you can do. Like, it's no longer just a matter of getting a job producing for films or for TV. There's just so much stuff that's done. I find it a really rich environment upon which to do things in, and increasingly one that you can actually make money at outside. Just it used to be in the old days that if you wanted to do these sort of projects that weren't in the traditional media, they just were for the love of it. And that's rapidly changing. So yeah, that's all coming up on Background Fundamentals.
That's
which
very
is, of course,
true.
Your free course.
I ran into Craig Leffel, who's taught a course for us in the past, The Craft of Color Grading. He's one of the co-owners of Optimus in Chicago, and now leads up their Optimus One production division. And I ran caught up with him, saw a post on Facebook last week, and didn't know he was in town, and rode my bike over to see him. And he was in town doing exactly that, Mike. He had a big production crew, maybe smaller than maybe a big national commercial, but it was just for web. It was a web program or web production that he was doing. And speaking with him, that's been one of the really bright spots of growth areas for what they're doing. You know, his overall budgets, it's not the same. Maybe they're hiring fewer crew members, or you know, certain things, but from a sensible business standpoint, they're finding it quite, not lucrative, not the right word, but, you know, a good business model that they're able to do these types of projects, make a sensible profit on them, not crazy 1980s post-production profits maybe on them. But it's more and more they're getting called on to do those types of projects in addition to the TV commercials, which are still going on. You know, there's, yeah, there's a lot of commercial time, at least especially in the States, when we have 300 channels, of which 290 are worthless, of time to fill with commercials. There, you know, still a lot of commercial work that's being done, but they're seeing an explosive growth in videos for web distribution, whether it's promotional or more. I don't want to call them viral, because they're certainly not viral when you spend that kind of money on them. Videos created by companies, I guess, online. It's a misnomer that they're always cheap and you cannot make money on it. That's certainly not true at all. So I'll be interested to hear about that in your class, if in fact you're talking about that.
Talk about whatever you guys, members of PhDs, are interested in. Well, that's not strictly true, but I definitely do craft a lot of stuff that happens inside PhD to suggestions that are made. But one of the things that is great is we've just, you know, I sort of alluded to this, but we've, with this film stuff that I was talking about, there's just really great access we're getting to a lot of productions a lot earlier than we ever have in the past. So while there are strict restrictions on us being able to do stuff, I'll, you know, to let you in on a secret, which isn't a very big one. Like, we do things like, for example, with Wired. And one of the main reasons we do these joint projects with Wired is that it gains us enormous credibility. So FX Guidery has enormous credibility. PhD has credibility. And as we add in a bit of work on the side for a couple of places like Wired, which of course, you know, we post on FX Guide as well. All of that gives us more and more of a, I guess, a card to play at the table. And it means that we're, you know, come to the attention of a lot more people, and they trust us, and as a consequence we get stuff earlier. One of the biggest problems with this in the past, and in addition to of course just getting the rights to use stuff, is when you can get access to it, because everyone's so nervous about leaking. And I don't think, John, we've ever had a major leak, so we're kind of, you know, we'd really pride ourselves on that. We try and really keep our mouths shut, and as a consequence you know, the studios and the effects houses can trust us and bring us in earlier. And that's really beneficial to everyone involved. Apart from the sort of obvious things about being able to show you how things are done, I think that it just we need to keep informed as to what the issues are that everyone is being faced with in production around the world. Because, you know, John and I aren't in day-to-day productions like we once were. And I find this really helps fill the gap. That we, you know, in constant talk with the studios and like about what they're using and where they're finding the issues and what bits of software they find hot and what they're finding challenging, what people need to be trained in. And then, of course, we fold that back in. And it's, look, it's no trivial matter to get access ongoing, constantly to get that. I mean, you could go out and poll people, I guess, every 6 months or something, but that's really not what it takes. I think one of the reasons that we were first with Arnold training, for example, or first with any number of things like Bifrost, is that we're just really close with the ear to the ground to people that are doing testing and doing stuff and working on productions that aren't going to come out for maybe 6 months. And we can hear what they're finding hot, what they're finding interesting, and then we can gear towards it. And that reduces the lag time between when you might say, I would really like to learn about, say, I don't know, Bifrost, and when we have training on it. And I think we've done a lot of work with Cinema 4D, with the stuff that we've done with a bunch of apps from Autodesk and for that matter Adobe, to try and close the gap and make sure that we're right on top of getting you training when you need it and when these newer versions are coming out. And I know a bunch of you have appreciated it, because a few of you have mentioned that, and it's not having to wait 6 months when and have to work it out before. Because, you know, obviously if we had to spend 6 months trying to work out how to use it and then train, you guys have had to have learned it by then yourselves, otherwise it you wouldn't be able to move forward.
And it also comes from you guys as well. And in addition to the big studios, it's also the, you know, places that we're talking, you know, mentioned Optimus, you know, decent size, you know, 75 to 100 person facility, or it's the folks in our partnership with, say, Hootenanny, right, who has 12 people. So, you know, we're able to see through our friends and coworkers and partners in other places, certainly what trends are interested in. And I would even take that to the FX PhD membership, to what you guys are looking for and experiencing as well, because it's such a broad global membership. it's not something where it's New York only or Sydney only or LA only. I mean, it's from, from South Africa to Norway to the Middle East, right? I mean, that's a thing that's really valuable. And that's where so much of your suggestions, even from the forums and talking about things that you're running into in your business and your experience in your area, that are really helpful for us as well to kind of raise a red flag or raise an interest to us that we can then follow up with ourselves and dive into further to bring what you want, to you guys. So
now, John, I can hear that the cleaners have started up in the background and I know that you've got a business meeting to get to. So I am going to let you go, my friend.
Yes. That's kind of like the closing whistle, isn't it? At the end of the factory shift. So, sorry about that. But, as always, thanks guys for, listening. Again, sorry about the 2-week break, but Franco is a bit necessary for a little R&R, but we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks for listening.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.